Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by Jay Cross.
I am Joe Branton.
And Matthew Knight.
I am Jay Cross.
Wait.
There you go. Yes, and welcome, dear listener, to the 281st episode of the Guitar Nerds Podcast. Lovely to have you back, Matt. You've been away on holiday for a bit.
I went to Dorset. Ooh. Actually, technically, I went to Lyme Regis, which is in Dorset, but we drove somewhere one day, and I was like, it says, welcome to Devon? And I didn't realise that basically Lyme Regis is on the border. So I was like, oh, driving between county lines now, aren't we? Oh. But yes, it was very nice. The seaside, we were incredibly lucky with the weather. I think, thankfully,
What are you talking about? All the pictures that you put up on Instagram were you in the rain.
But that was like... You know, that's good British weather.
Oh, okay.
At least it wasn't 38 degrees, which would have been terrible. It would have been far too hot. Yeah, it was quite windy at some points. But apart from that, actually, it remained fairly dry.
Oh, well, it is lovely lovely to have you back. I must introduce our new patrons joining us this week, both at the $5 tier. Thank you very much to Martin Cox and also to Kat. So thank you both for joining. Kat's only given the name Kat.
Did you extend the name Martin because he'd put loads of A's?
He did put loads of A's.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Fine.
So
just
checking. Yes. No, I wasn't just sort of, you know.
Thought you'd maybe like trodden on something halfway through saying his name.
Yes. No. So yes, welcome aboard the Patreon train.
Another couple of legends on the train.
Where are we now?
Choo choo.
Sorry.
How far away are we from mod mode now?
About the same, actually. You know, you win some and you lose some, so it's around the same place, but still less than $50 away from
fewer.
Mod mode. Yeah, yes,
fewer than
$50 away from mod mode. So, Matt, did you get up to any? Did you see any guitar shops on your holiday? Anything like that happen?
Actually, I saw one and I couldn't go in. I actually went to Bath and Vintage and Rare is there.
Oh, of course.
But they are open for appointment only.
Damn.
And I thought best not to phone for an appointment when I'm on holiday with my partner, standing outside being like, can I come in, please?
What, in case you accidentally bought a 60s Gretsch or something?
Yeah, exactly. No, very few music shops, actually. I was hoping to find, you know, one of those like really small ones that doesn't really have like an internet business, and then you walk in and they've got like... you know, new in box Boss pedals from like the 80s. And I'm like, yeah, that's what I want. Although when I was driving home yesterday, went past Tune In Music, which is like on the outskirts of London. Never seen it. It's just secondhand. Went on their website, got an original DM2 for sale.
Oh, cool.
So, you know, these things do turn up. But no real musical stuff.
Matt, you didn't really talk about your new gear day when you bought your car, I don't think, did you?
Did we?
How was that? How was that on its first big trip?
It was fine. I mean, I don't drive, so, you know, it was a great, great passenger vehicle.
So you slept?
Yeah,
and
I slept.
Amy got you there.
Yeah, and she got me there. Bless her. She did an amazing job. 4.5 hours. I think it's one of the longest journeys she's ever done as well. So she learned to drive in London, which is a nightmare. But yeah, driving, you know, a lot of motorways and then into the countryside. One of the craziest things, actually, just in terms of that, is having lived in London, then going away to like proper countryside, you forget how fewer people live outside of London.
Yes, I
came back and
village.
I was like, wow, so this is the most people I've seen for like 2 weeks. I went for a run when I was back at home and I didn't see, I did 7 miles or 8 miles, didn't see a single person. It's just like, wow, this is great. I want to live here.
That is mad. Yeah,
I'm a big fan of you know, empty, you know, quiet villages. There, it is lovely being in these places. I'm on the Vintage and Rare website at the moment. They have some absolutely cracking instruments there. There's so much that I wish I could purchase. Best thing, ES330T with the single P90 bang in the middle of the body.
Yeah, that's
lovely
the one.
Sunburst. Whoa, I mean, that is a great guitar. It actually says sold out on that one, but you know, that is a lovely guitar. They've got a Gibson Barney Kessel as well. Very cool.
Oh, yeah. We had one of those in the shop once, I think.
Did we?
I think a reissue one.
Yeah, so it's like an ES-175, but a double cutaway. Double cut. But the horn is obviously on an ES-175. It's quite an aggressive, sharp horn. So it's like two very sort of devil-like horns on a big, deep jazz box. And then on the Barney Kessel, you get a wooden tailpiece with his name sort of on a plaque on there, which is quite unusual for Gibson, the way that works. And it's in a gorgeous sort of red-tinted sunburst. Less than £7,000 for a 1961 Barney Kessel. I think that's actually very reasonable considering, you know, how much you pay for a Gibson custom shop today to be able to get something from 61 in what looks like absolutely incredible condition.
They've got, oh, they sold. That's a shame. They had a 2005 Gibson Custom Shop 54 reissue gold top. Doesn't sound very exciting until you realise it's the one pickup version.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
So no scratch plate, just one volume, one tone. Absolutely.
Wrap around bridge.
So lovely. Good. So good. I've always wanted one of those.
Joe, just having a look on just looking up Barney Kessel, did you know that there was he had a K signature model come out only last year, which is wild because he died about 20 years ago. But, you know, he died 15 years ago. But yeah, he's had a K signature model come out. I didn't know that K were making new guitars.
So K have been back up and running for a few years, and they have they have quite a minimal range of instruments that they're making now, but they look absolutely fantastic. They, especially when it comes to basses, I think they've made some really nice stuff, and it's not cheap stuff. They're you know, it's not especially premium priced, but they're certainly you know, they're not just banging out, you know, sort of badly made budget stuff anymore. They're going back to K's original like 50s roots and really trying to make some interesting, nice looking reissues. I wish I could remember what the models are available. Yeah, that's right. So they actually release them as vintage reissues.
And then.
Let me pop along to All Guitars. man Googles on a podcast. But yeah, so they do a series of the Thin Twin. That was the one I was trying to remember the name of. But there are sort of 7 models in total, including the basses, 2 basses. Now, the Pro Bass for me is very cool, like a single cut, deep jazz bodied guitar. These lovely big Art Deco headstocks that they actually mimic on everything. They're kind of 2-tiered headstocks, but not the way you think, because it's a 2x2 or a 3x3 headstock with this big sort of triangular pizza slice that's raised in the middle. So very sort of 50s kind of Art Deco-y, that sort of look, really very statement headstocks. And then on the basses, you get, in the same way, you know, on the like the Reverend the Reverend Greg Koch signature model, you've got like that the scratch plate piece underneath the neck pickup. Well, they have that mimicked on the Pro Bass, but on the Pro Bass, the scratch plate is like a tiger, print. That sort of
thing.
I thought
you were going to say like a tiger, like an actual tiger.
It's just a tiger, but you know that sort of old tortoiseshell sort of look, the tigery tortoiseshell look. So it's that. So it's just such an incredible statement piece, but
like proper tortoiseshell.
Yeah, that's right. And that's that sort of style of tortoiseshell is mimicked across the range, like the Thin Twin, which I think is the guitar that's definitely the most interesting. They do in like this in like a gorgeous sort of. It's a maple top, but it's very yellowed, and it has like a lovely velvety finish to it. A big oversized, tigery scratch plate pinstripe binding. This very very. It's called the Thin Twin because of the pickups that Kay originally designed in the '50s, which were these incredibly thin lipstick style pickups that they have in extreme positions on the neck and the bridge. And then sort of really oddly tightly placed volume and tone controls. They're really cool, like really interesting guitars. They're all just under £1,000, I think. So they're relatively premiumly priced. I think really interesting, awesome guitars. If you're looking for something different, I think really interesting.
But, there you go. I was actually on there while you were just saying that. I was scrolling through, and they've got a secondhand guitar from Knight Guitars. I didn't know I had my own brand, but there you go.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, you do.
From the
you
UK do. As well.
Yeah. How about that? How about that? But yeah, there's some great stuff. Oh, Vintage and Rare is so good. They've got like I'm looking at a Green Sparkle 1962 Fender Jaguar that's price is pleasing choir. Oh,
that's what, sorry?
Its price is pleasing choir.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I thought you said pleasing choir. As in,
yeah,
like,
you have to turn up with a pleasing choir.
Yeah,
and then
exactly.
They're like, oh, that's good enough.
Oh, that's
here's
lovely.
Your Jaguar, sir. Yes, that makes sense. Well, yeah, they've got some fantastic stuff on there. Now, before we get into talking about some more guitars, it is the start of a new month, and so in line with that, Guitar Nerds are donating portion of our profits every month to a new charity. And this month we've selected Girls Rock London, which you can check out, dear listener, on girlsrocklondon.com. So GRL is a music project for girls, women, trans and non-binary people in London. And they run projects where participants learn about music making and performance. Their programs are aimed at complete beginners as well as experienced musicians, and it provides a platform for girls and women and trans and non-binary people to find and develop their voices, not just vocally, their musical contribution. And their aim is to demystify music making, challenge gender inequality in the music industry, and build participants' self-esteem and confidence, which is awesome. What a fantastic charity. I know it's very localized for us. Obviously, last month we were doing something much more global in Black Lives Matter. But now, we'll do this lovely sort of London-based charity because they seem absolutely wonderful, and we'll be picking a new one each week. But you, dear listener, can check them out at girlsrocklondon.com, where you can read all about what they do, and you can also donate to the charity as well, or help them in obtaining equipment for all of their projects. A very very lovely charity to get involved with, indeed.
Yeah,
now,
good stuff.
Yes, very good stuff indeed. Now, this week, last Friday, I launched the first episode of the Home Recording Guide, a new sort of like Friday series of podcasts, just running a four-part. And we got Neural DSP teamed up with us, as well as Focusrite, actually, for that series of podcasts. And Neural DSP are doing 30% off with us on all of their plugins. So I want to just make sure listeners are aware of that, because I think it's an absolutely incredible deal. All you've got to do is, you know, as with most of these things, use the code GuitarNerds at the checkout and you can get 30% off any of the Neural DSP plugins. But my goodness, they do a fantastic range of plugins. Of course, they do an Omega AmpWorks range of plugins, Matt, which you play the real thing.
Yeah, yeah. I'm looking forward to actually listening to this podcast, Joe.
There you go. Yes, it's you can learn. I mean, the first episode, we spent a lot of time talking about plugins. With the second episode, we're going to be focusing much more on hints and tips and things that you can do to improve, you know, when recording from home. I've got some great producers coming onto the episode, so we'll be trying to sort of pick their brains a bit on good practice for recording from home. But one of the newer DSP plugins I've spent a lot of time with is the Corey Wong from Wolfpack. His range of plugins are incredible, like a lovely range of like crystal clean guitar amps, bass amps included, and then the effects. The Shimmer Reverb is absolutely unbelievably good. Really incredible, and like a really good kind of versatile delay as well, sort of like Big Sky or sort of, you know, the Boss 500 series influence style delay on there, which
I mean, he is just like a monster player. I've only really just got into like his playing and the band, and they headlined Madison Square Garden, and I watched that live performance, which is wicked because it's all filmed on one camera and the guy's just like wandering around the stage like filming the band. I'm like, it's amazing. His playing is like incredible, and obviously Joe Dart's like a ridiculous bass player.
Yeah.
And because he's very much of that sort of like clean funk guitar sound, those plugins work really, really well. And I'm keen to like get into plugins more. I think that where I've always struggled is, and what I always used to say, like working in shops, was it's that kind of like player feedback, that response between the guitar and then like the guitar speaker. And I sort of lack that sometimes with plugins because you don't almost get that same response.
I certainly think that has been the case. And I do think plugins are advancing at such an alarming rate.
Well,
right,
I mean,
now
you only have to like watch. I mean, I've watched loads of videos of, you know, people demoing. If you watch like Tosin Bassi doing his, you know, plugins, or even like Rabia demoing some of them, whatever, they just sound so good. Once they're mixed into a track and, you know, you're listening with headphones on, they just sound so good.
Yeah.
Like you wouldn't really tell. I think the only barrier for me using them sometimes is myself, because I'm so used to hearing a guitar through an amp.
Yeah.
And I think if you can get, you know, like many others, you get past that, I think, yeah, the whole world of other options open up because of the sheer processing power that a Mac or a PC can actually give you over a chip inside a Guitar FX, for example.
Yeah.
And how much, you know, you can actually do. I can't remember if we were talking about it on this podcast or who I was talking to about. A friend of mine works with a bunch of, you know, sort of composers and stuff like that, and he got given one of the top of the range like Mac towers, like absolutely spec'd to the max. It's got like a 4 terabyte solid state drive in it, and it's got like a ridiculous amount of RAM. And he said that his like load in session for Logic had something like 100 tracks, and every track was running every plugin.
Wow.
With like no CPU slowdown. And you can't get that sort of power in like an effects processor.
No.
So there are some, you know, crazy things that you can do. So I think there is a new generation of guitar players that will use that, especially in the studio. I think it's just going to be interesting how people take that live. I think that's the one thing that's not there yet. These people may be using that live. I'm sure there are some people, you don't hear about it as much. I guess it's not as exciting as being like, yeah, I play this 59 Les Paul through this like 1960s, you know, Marshall. It's like, yeah, I play this, you know, this Fender Strat through my MacBook Pro into my in-ear monitors. You know, it's, I guess maybe it's not quite as exciting yet, but I definitely think there'll be a player in the not too distant future who will be, that will be their rig.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's no reason for it not, as things are getting better. I do think that the plugins and plugin success is something that's been isolated very much to tech metal over the, you know, the last few years. You know, even you look at Neural DSP's catalogue of amplifiers, and the bulk of them are those sorts of virtuoso heavy players. And I think that sort of tone, because it's so digital in its sound, lends itself very well to plugins. For me, the Corey Wong is the first one that I think has stepped outside of that, because it is actually dynamic, and you know, the cleans have a lot of like a lot of life to them, rather than that sort of very simple digital tone that you get from more tech stuff.
I put it down to like almost like virtual headroom. You know, sometimes, you know, especially in the early days, if you were going into a plugin, everything just felt very narrow, I guess is one way to put it. You know, the sounds really feel like they didn't have a lot of dynamic range. And now it feels like, yeah, you can, it almost feels like, you know, you are getting that plethy, but the more you put in, the more you get out of it.
Yeah.
So I'm keen to give it a go, definitely.
Yeah.
And that one especially. And I think actually what's really good from what I've seen is they actually, there are obviously options, but they don't give you like 300 amps. They're like, here's the Corey Wong plugin, and here's like 300 variations on one amp that he used. And it's like, I think there's only like two or three amps, right?
There's a handful of presets on there, because of course they give you some bass guitar voicing on those amps as well.
Yeah, that's cool.
Which is quite cool. So there's a handful. I don't know how many. I don't know, like 10, 15 maybe. Right. But then it's all you. You know, it's up to you to manipulate these and you to choose your selection. Because, yeah, 3 amp heads, 3 cabs, you know, a couple of drives and a reverb and a delay, you know, and a compressor. Like, it's quite simple. There's the flexibility comes in kind of how you use that equipment.
Mm. I mean, his pedal board is actually really, really simple. I think it's got a compressor, a couple of light drives. He uses an Eventide H9 for wah sounds and a couple of other sort of like filters, and then like a Big Sky.
Yeah, there you go. Very, very simple. And yes, this mimics that sort of completely. But yes, very good. So listener, go check out Neural DSP if you're, you know, interested in home recording. I think they've got some really good stuff. And as I say, you get 30% off with code GuitarNerds. Let's do some news. News! First up, and we're coming straight back over to you, Matt Knight. Why don't we talk about a company that you bought a pedal from quite recently, not this one. There's a new release from Jackson Audio.
Yes, brand new. So this would have been announced September 1st. So this is the, hope I pronounce this right, El Gapo?
Yes, it means handsome.
Oh, thank you.
Is it Guapo?
Guapo?
Yeah.
Grappo,
yeah, which is handsome, yeah.
Which is the Matthias Asato signature overdrive distortion from Jackson Audio. So Jackson Audio, we spoke about a bit when I bought the Golden Boy, which is the Joey Landreth signature multi-diode overdrive distortion. This is represents a sort of 2-year development process with Matthias Asato for a Marshall in a box style pedal. So they reckon it sort of perfectly replicates the sort of legendary JCM 800. But you've got a 3-band EQ, drive, level controls, as you'd expect. But adding in things like different diode clipping styles, similar to the Golden Boy. Gain cycle, which I really like, something I spoke about on the Golden Boy, which is you hit both foot switches together and it cycles through 20%, 50%, 75% or 100% of where you set the gain control on the pedal. So, you know, if you set the gain at all the way up, you start off at 25%, quite low gain, tap it in again, gives you a bit more and a bit more, so you can have your sort of rhythm style, your lead style, and you can cycle through that in the process
that's
of a track,
really,
for example.
That's a really interesting feature. Like, that's actually genuinely quite unique and quite new.
Absolutely, yeah. I think it's really good, and obviously when you add MIDI on, you can jump between those for different presets, for example, if using a switching system. But the different diode clipping styles give you different overdrive or distortion variants on that. So it's almost like having a modded Marshall in a box. Now, obviously, Matteo Sato is sort of known for sort of like crystal clean, like neo soul, kind of like, you know, really nice sort of playing on that style, but also uses loads of gain in his solo work. So it covers sort of both of that. And I actually think this will be a fantastic pedal. Comes in a really nice sort of black and gold finish. But if it's anything like the Golden Boy, it'll be a fantastic unit, especially if you want that sort of plexi style drive. Obviously, all the EQ is parametric, so it's really good for tone shaping. I think it's going to be a wicked pedal, and no doubt loads of people are going to go after it because of the Matteo Sato link. Obviously, yeah. I think he's got something like, I think it was like over a million people on Instagram now.
Yeah.
I mean, he is just a monster guitar player.
So, just to kind of go over it.
So the four different diode clipping modes take you anywhere from what they call vintage Marshall, classic screamer, asymmetric or symmetrical clipping. So very much changes the not only the sound, but actually the feel as well. And again, how dynamic it is to your guitar playing.
This is a very versatile unit.
Yeah, and obviously having the MIDI on there as well. One of the reasons I was using the Golden Boy on my pedal board was for the MIDI stuff. I mean, there's a lot of options, so sometimes you do tend to just kind of find the sweet spot. And then that's where the gain cycling comes in really handy. You know, you find the clipping sound that you like, you set the gain where you want, and then you've got that gain cycling that you can go through. But what's nice is you can gain cycle and change all the clipping diodes and the boost all from the pedal itself. You don't have to have a MIDI controller. It's just various combinations of the two foot switches. So no doubt this will be an incredibly versatile drive pedal that you can really make your own. Price-wise, nothing as of yet, but I'd imagine it's probably going to sit around the same price range as the Golden Boy, which I think was $299 USD.
I think I do have some price stuff on that. I think it's going to be a little bit more, this one. I think it's going to be around the $349.
Right, okay.
Price point. But
it could be the best Marshall in a box pedal out there. If they've really gone for the Golden Boy's really focused around the Blues Breaker, like King of Tone style circuit, which is actually also based on like those pedals were based on that sort of Marshall, sort of cranked Marshall. So this is much more down the JCM 800, which is a very, very different kind of Marshall vibe to the ones that the Blues Breaker was based on. But yeah. I think it should be a good one.
So consistently impressed with Jackson Audio at the moment. They really sort of came out of nowhere for me. I don't think I'd even heard of them until you you bought the Golden Boy. And then just everything I see them do seems to just be incredible. They offer just such high quality.
Yeah, and I mean, they've got a really nice compressor, a nice boost. Of the chassis and the feel is just really nice, incredibly well built. Not many dealers. I don't think there might only be one, maybe two dealers in the UK. I actually got mine direct from them. But yeah, just really well built, really well thought out. Clearly just sort of like a lot of design, you know, and a lot of thought into the process of how it sounds and how it works and how easy it is to use, you know, on the fly as well. But like I said, I think for me, that gain cycling is a really killer feature. Like, more pedals should have that. I think that's a really wicked feature to be able to cycle through all the different levels of that and just, you know, have a almost covers like three or four pedals on your pedal board.
Attention to detail seems to be something very key to Jackson Audio in general. I'm just looking at the Prism right now, which is their buffer, boost, preamp and EQ and overdrive all in one sort of single pedal.
Yeah, you see a lot of those sort of, I guess it's like a kind of, well, not like a utility pedal, I guess in some ways you could say that, like a make gooder, in the sense that you would put it at the front of your pedal chain. It gives you all the things that you kind of need, but you don't want three separate pedals for. Yeah. The Unit 67 from Drybell Effects makes me think this similar sort of thing. You know, those kind of always on pedals that you want to have at the beginning of your signal chain that sort of model the sort of input gain of an amp or something similar.
Have you checked out the latest Ball Family Reserve collection from Ernie Ball Music Man? BFI is a celebration of Ernie Ball's heritage in instrument craftsmanship, which features some of the finest figure tone woods and finishes available. These rare pieces are offered in limited production runs and allow the public access to instruments previously reserved for family and loyal artists. This month features the Bongo in Wild Cherry Burst, the Majesty in Blue Steakhouse, and the Valentine in Target Burst. Learn more about where to get yours at music-man.com/BFR. Guitar Nerds is brought to you in association with Faith Guitars. Based right here in the UK, Faith Guitars are designed by British guitar luthier Patrick James Eggle, who has been hand-building guitars for decades for some of the biggest names in the business. Founded in 2002, Faith Guitars have been voted the UK's best acoustic guitars 5 times in a row by both the public and panels of music industry experts, so you can be confident in your new Faith guitar. Like all quality acoustics, Faith guitars are made of all solid tone wood, so you can be sure they'll start off sounding great and improve year on year. Faith don't use laminated woods, but you'll be pleased to know that despite the all solid tone woods, the superb specification and handmade construction, Faith guitars are still affordable, with prices starting at around £450 or $600. Discover the range at faithguitars.com and then visit one of the many UK or European retailers to try them for yourself. But hold up! If you're in the USA or Canada, you can buy direct at faithguitarsusa.com, and by using the coupon code NERDS at the checkout, you can get an exclusive 10% discount. So, in the UK and Europe, check out the guitars at your local dealer or faithguitars.com. But for North American listeners, buy direct at faithguitarsusa.com and use the coupon code NERDS for a special 10% off at the checkout. That's USA coupon code NERDS at the checkout. Faith Guitars, award-winning acoustics designed right here in the UK. I'm on the on this prism pedal. You can actually choose a colour as well. You can have it in stainless steel, anodized black, blue or purple.
Nice.
And you can also choose whether you want it new or scratch and dent blemished. Which is great. So I assume just ones that they've dropped. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, this one's perfect. Oh, I've dropped it. Oh, well. But yeah, no, great company. If you haven't checked them out already, definitely worth investigating. Really, really versatile. Can maybe take a couple of drive pedals off your board and free up precious space for other effects.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like ring modulator.
Ring mod is very important. Do you know what? This week I had my first band practice since all of this, all of everything's been going on. I had my first band practice back in the studio, and first time I got my tour pedal board back out of storage to use, and we were working on some new stuff. And I am either driven. It's either a drive sound or a ring mod sound on my bass now. For all the new stuff, it's one of those two things. I've just minimized the board to the MS3. The Boss BC2 is X, is that
BC1.
It? BC1X.
The bass compressor.
The bass compressor and the BB1X, the drive. So that's it. And all I'm doing on the MS3 is switching between a patch that has the drive on and a patch that has the built-in ring mod on. That's it. Nice. Ring mod for bass. It is the future.
Ring mod is a hidden gem, I think, for some, you know, if you haven't really used it properly, because some, not all of them, if you can turn down the frequency low enough, it becomes an incredible trem. And that was what was really good about the Moog one, the MF-102. You could get it super, super low, so it became like a really good trem. And then with an expression pedal, you could ramp up the LFO and go into like crazy ring mod territory. Some are a little bit more musical than others. The one that was really versatile, although I could never wrap my head around it as much, was the one from Electro-Harmonix. The ring thing.
Ring thing.
The ring thing.
I think it was when we did the pedal boards thing, Joe, way back, it's probably like 4 years ago the Roland Boss Art Center. Before I worked for Roland, we had all those pedal boards out. There was a couple of ring things on the various pedal boards there being used for different things.
I think Tom Peters used one.
Yes.
Yeah, I think Tom Peters had a ring thing. He's actually, you know, he's coming on one of the Home Recording Guide podcasts, as he is a producer as a day job. So he's going to be talking to me soon.
Oh, nice.
On that. But yes. Jay Cross. You know, we absolutely cracked through a load of the wonderful Fender releases last week, but we completely bypassed the 70th anniversary Esquire.
Yes. So before we jump into that, I was called out after the podcast last week, and I feel like I'm being publicly pressured into making a correction.
Oh, really? I didn't see this.
Did you not? Okay. Well, that's because you've got all of these people blocked on Facebook, I think, isn't it? You just
Yeah.
So someone I can't remember who it was now. Someone on the Facebook group called me out. For saying that when we were talking about the Kunafe pickups, I said after a very long and tiring day, I called Kunafe an element, which of course it isn't. Of course it's an alloy. It's made up of three elements, copper, nickel and iron, for people thinking that I don't know that as well. So of course I got called out for that. And I also got privately called out for my misdescription of the Trapper bass distortion. So I should just quickly reiterate what that does, because basically what I said was incorrect. And it was because I'd had a long day. But it's fine. We're here. We're all mates here. And it's fine. I don't mind being...
You get wrong? Because I'm really excited about that pedal.
So basically, the Trapper bass distortion has got the two drive circuits in, and the signal doesn't split, but what happens is the signal splits clean and drive when you're in distortion two. And so you can just, if you're just running distortion two, you've got the clean path, which goes through the low pass filter to roll off some of the top end, so that the driven half of your signal stays really distorted at the top end, but cleaner at the low end.
I understand.
Yeah?
Right. Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay,
it makes perfect sense.
I basically said that the signal splits between one and two, which of course it doesn't do that. It's, yeah, you've just got your clean signal going through when you're using distortion two. So there we go. That's fine. That's it. That's, I feel really uncomfortable doing that. And that's the last time I'm ever going to, and you'll know, oh, did I apologize? If I apologized, it was a mistake.
Right.
Let's just leave it as that. So yes, jumping back to the news this week. You're right, we didn't get to talk about the 70th anniversary Esquires, which is actually very cool. So 2020 is, of course, the 70th anniversary of the first electric guitar made by Fender, which was the Esquire, released in 1950. And to celebrate that, there are four different colours available as in the Esquire. And I was thinking about it. I can't remember the last time that a Esquire was available in the from the American range. I remember when we were at GAC, there was a short run of Mexican Esquires. There's also been fairly recently some Squire Esquires, but I can't remember the last time that there was actually an American Fender Esquire.
It seems a strange thing to not just be a standard model.
Well, I guess the thing is that, you know, you can get most of those sounds through a Telecaster.
Yeah.
You know.
Esquire just sounds cooler.
Esquire does sound very cool. It's a cool thing to say. But yes, so the Esquire is, I'm sure everyone listening to the podcast knows what an Esquire is. It's the original guitar that Leo Fender brought to the market. It's a single pickup. It looks like a Tele. You've still got three-way selector switch there, which takes you through the three tonal options of full tone, half tone, and tonal eclipse. And no, I will not be elaborating on that. Yeah, 7.25 radius. Just a great looking guitar, great sounding. If you just want to have an absolute, you know, just raging like cool looking Telecaster, then you can get it in white blonde, you can get it in surf green, you can get it in Lake Placid blue, or
oh, I thought it only came in Lake Placid
blue. Oh no, or there's two color sunburst. So
oh, cool.
Yeah, so you've got, yeah, white blonde. The white blonde is the one that looks, you know, the what you expect it to. It's, I think,
right,
it's cool,
right,
that it comes in a couple of other colors. Surf green, I don't think
I'd go for the sunburst.
Yeah,
of course you would.
Yeah, it's just, you're really boring though. So, you know, I, on the other hand, would go for the white, which is, you know, right, definitely not a boring color.
I think it's all the right specs in all the right places, mm-hmm, on that one. Question for you, Jay: Is it routed for a neck pickup?
Don't know.
Or is it solid?
I would expect that it is routed for a neck pickup,
because I think that was. I don't actually know whether, because the Esquire obviously came first, so probably the early ones, I guess, were never routed.
Were not, no.
But then later on, I'm assuming they probably were just all routed the same, and then just the correct neck plate was put on depending on what the order.
Yeah,
was.
Yeah. I actually don't know at all whether this has got the routing. I would be surprised if it did not. Let's put it that way. But yeah, like you say, I mean, the Tele, obviously, well, the Broadcaster came only a year later, and then the Tele the year after that. So I would suspect that it's got the routing in there. I'd be surprised if it didn't.
The reason I ask is actually just another bit of news that was on the list, which I know we didn't mark, but obviously just reading it now, I see that there's a new Brad Paisley signature pickup called the Secret Agent.
Yeah, who's doing that? Is that Seymour Duncan?
That's Seymour Duncan, which is a stealthy new neck position pickup that's designed to be hidden underneath the pickguard of a Fender Esquire.
I didn't realise it's designed to be hidden. That's so cool. It's bladed as well, isn't it?
Yeah, so I think the idea is that it's got enough of a power so it still works under the pickup. Under the pickguard. But yeah, you can have a three-way switch and some sort of tonal variations as well. I mean, obviously Brad Paisley is an incredible player. You know, and obviously he's known for playing, you know, Tellys and Esquires, but I think that is incredibly incredibly cool. Obviously, way back, you know, there's not a new concept to the John English Stealth Esquire, which was one of the kind of like sort of rarities that does pop up every now and then from the Fender Custom Shop, was the Esquire with the two hidden pickups in the neck and in the middle position. So I think this is really cool for people who have got an Esquire, maybe it has got that neck pickup route. You could install,
or even
this.
If you've got a telly and you want to buy a scratch plate and make it into a super cool Esquire.
Yeah,
and that's a great.
Yeah, I didn't even think of that. That's a great idea.
That is a really cool product. I mean, on the note of you know, sort of like Fender's first bits and bobs, do you know the first ever left-handed Telecaster is currently for sale on Reverb at the moment.
Yeah, I've seen that on there. Yeah,
yeah, I've been to a 1951 left-handed butterscotch telly with all the. It's used condition, obviously. You know, it looks like it's had a.
Well, yeah, it's 69 years old, mate. Yeah.
But it looks like it's had a. It's had a good life of playing, but it's not too wrecked. It's in, you know, this is what I would say light relicking. I think Fender would term it if it was a, if it was coming out of the custom shop. £95,000.
Wow.
It's over in the States, so it's also £2,500 to ship it over here.
Oh, but, wow, because of the insurance, I would suspect.
At that point, were, maybe this is something that someone in who listens to the podcast will know, or maybe Jay knows or could find out. When they made lefties at that point, were they special orders, or did they decide that they were going to make left-handed guitars? And that was just the first one off the run, because obviously it requires a different. Well, I guess they were probably all.
They
hand
were
cut
all handmade. No,
yeah, they were all hand
so
cuts.
I believe that this was a special order, but I remember when this came up for sale. I think it was literally just like the fella went to his local guitar shop and said, "I want one of these newfangled Telecasters, but I'm left-handed. So can you get me a left-handed one?" And they just, you know, phoned through to Fender and he went, okay, why not, I'll figure it out, just turn it round, innit,
just turn it round. Yeah.
I think they were, I'm sure that they were special order only. I don't think it was the sort, and
not
actually
in 51.
Well, like they
wouldn't have been anything other than the special order.
Yeah.
I guess the thing is you think about in 51 they were still the, you know, a company that is just getting started, you could probably ask them to do anything and they do it, you know, in the same way as a lot of guitar companies now. If someone's just getting up and running and they don't have any left-handed guitars on their website, I'm sure if you said, "Oh, I really like your guitars. Sorry, hi there. It's me, Jay Cross, in 1951. I've just been on your website, and I see you don't have any left-handed guitars. And also, your website's not very good. Perhaps you could do something about that." But no, you know, I reckon it all would have. In the same way as like the Gibson, you know, we've talked about it before, about how there's only four burst Les Pauls made between the years of like 58 and 1960. And I think they were always special order only.
Yeah,
and I guess that's where colour. I mean, imagine going into a dealer in like 1961, being like, "God, love the look of this strap, but you know what would be cool? Pink." And then they're just going, "Yeah, I guess. Let's just phone Fender and find out."
Yeah.
You know, no.
Just imagine Leo going around to the car dealership and just siphoning some pink paint from the Cadillac range, and
well, I mentioned
it straight onto a Strat.
I mentioned at the time, and like a few weeks ago when we talked about it on the podcast, and I cannot remember the name now that was given to the finishes, but when Strats were coming over to the UK for the first time, because Fiesta Red was such a popular colour at the time, so thanks to Hank Marvin, whenever Strats were coming over in any other colours, lots of UK shops were just refinishing them in Fiesta Red.
Yeah.
Because they were more likely to sell, which I thought was incredible. Like,
yeah, just I think that's why it's so difficult to find.
Selma finishes, they were called. Yeah,
yeah. I think that's why trying to find like original, well, you get a lot of 60s guitars, you know, that were resprays, and then obviously you get to the 80s, and then people like try and strip them back to like original finishes, or then you get people go, oh, I'm just going to put like a Floyd on it.
Yeah, that's it. Like, you, like
Kayla.
Find us.
No, Kayla. Yeah. Let's
Kayla,
be honest.
Yeah.
It wouldn't have been Floyd.
Speed
it would have been
loader.
A massive Kayla.
And find loader. Like a 70s P bass that hasn't had sort of a huge battery pack sort
yeah,
of
exactly.
routed out
yeah.
in the back of it so that they could put EMGs in it.
But just a couple of other points about this Esquire that are probably worth pointing out. It's a roasted pine body, which is quite unusual. But yeah, I've played a couple of these and, you know, they're fantastic. Obviously it's the big U neck, which is what you get on, guitars of that sort of era. And it's a brand new pickup as well.
Oh, yeah?
Yes. So it's a special Tim Shaw designed Esquire pickup. So, yeah, like completely unique for this guitar. So very, very cool.
Very cool.
Yeah, they do look great. I mean, that white blonde one is just, I'm a very simple person, and that is a simple guitar for a simple geezer like me.
It does look fantastic. On this this left-handed telly, very quickly, one owner.
Yeah,
rather. The owner died at 95 and played the guitar every day since 1951.
Yeah.
That's
amazing.
Pretty yeah. incredible. Hey, also, you know, on the sort of a, you know, custom made guitar talk, the guitar we're having built with guitar assembly is nearly there. I think we decided a headstock now. I put the vote out to all our social media communities, and I only gave people an option of 2-tier headstocks because I just like the idea of a 2-tier headstock. Some were upset that there was no sort of normal headstock, but we've selected a shape, and I think that's all going to go ahead. So, you know, I just need to arrange to go up there and help make it. So it's yeah, there we go, nearly there with the new Guitar Nerds shell pink channeled instrument. I'm very excited.
Very cool.
Yeah, it's going to be
Matt
good.
Matt Knight, should we talk about Custom Shop Gretches?
Absolutely. So while I was away, I got tagged with this guitar several times through social media. And I didn't realise it was actually part of a big range. So Gretsch have obviously a custom shop, which is part of Fender. And there's only one master builder there, Stephen Stern, who has a small team of people. I think a few people that have worked specifically with him just on building Gretsch guitars. And I think maybe Jay would back this up as well. I think Stephen Stern was originally a furniture maker.
I can't remember his background, honestly.
Yeah, I'm sure I remember seeing a video and he was like, you know, well known for making furniture at one point, and obviously moved to the Fender Custom Shop, making Gretsch specifically. And this year, 2020, they have announced a bunch of super cool, super limited. I don't know if they're just one of one or whether there are a few more. There's a website here listing the ones that have landed in Europe. The one I got tagged in the most was the G6-134T Penguin. So this is a master-built pink Penguin, the absolute dream machine, but with three pickups in a relict pink. This is an absolute machine, available from Guitar in the UK at the moment. Two TV Jones, and then another type of TV Jones in the neck position, which I'm not 100% sure on. Three pickup switches. I think you can just turn them on, all on and off individually, with three controls. Bigsby, an absolute dream machine. That is my I would absolutely love that guitar. So if anyone wants to buy it for me, I'd be very, very grateful. But they've done a bunch of other ones in the range, which I think are super cool. So they've done a G6199 reverse Billy Bow. The Billy Bow is one of the coolest guitars. I don't even know how you'd explain it. I would just say, I don't know. Like,
it's very long and thin.
Yeah, it's... I mean, obviously, Billy Gibbons is massively into hot-rodded 50s cars, so this is kind of just like a hot-rodded 50s Gretsch, I guess, in some way. So they've done a closet classic finish in black sparkle, one sort of P90 in the bridge, which I think is absolutely incredible. They've got a G6120T Nashville, which is kind of your traditional big... hollow body Gretsch in a two-tone Lake Placid blue. The Falcon Roundup, which is very cool. So this is like a white Falcon body with the hollow body G Gretsch logo, with that's leather and studded bound.
It's so good.
Which is amazing.
These are like the most cowboy guitars I've ever seen.
Absolutely. One which I think is very cool, which is a G6134 DC, so double cut white penguin. With the hardtail Cadillac bridge, which is the sort of C-shaped bridge on there, which is awesome.
It's very cool. That big headstock on kind of a smaller bodied double cutaway just looks fantastic.
Yes, yes. There's also a G6136T, which is the Falcon.
That's relatively standardized, isn't it? These the price tags on these are all pretty mega.
Yeah, I mean, I think Stephen Stern's got like a 3 or 4 year waiting list. Wow. It's just ridiculous. But this one's a relic faded Sonic blue, but it's for so me faded. This is the best Falcon specs. It's the TV Jones in the bridge position, and you've got the slightly different TV Jones, which is like the black with gold sort of pickup studs in the neck. There is a variation that they don't make anymore as a standard Gretsch with that same configuration, which is killer. Country Club, which is a three P90'd hollow body hardtail.
I don't know if this is my favorite thing, actually, the Country Club.
It's very cool. It's very, very cool.
I love that body shape. I love the rounded lower horn on the Gretsches like that. And the tailpiece on this is just really crazy.
Yeah, the best, I guess the best tailpiece of them all in some ways is the 6130 Roundup, which is their sort of, I guess it's like the duo jet, smaller single cutaway hollow body. The tailpiece is what looks like brass or aged gold, which is embossed with several cowboys on a horse rounding up some cattle.
And there's a wagon.
There's a wagon, yeah. So some just ridiculous guitars from Gretsch. I mean, I'd love a Stephen Stern Masterbuilt. They are truly incredible instruments.
Oh, and they're all, they actually list, they're all at different dealers now as well, these instruments.
Yes, that's why I said I think they might be one of one.
Right, right. The Roundup's not is quite affordable. Only £7,500, comparatively to some of the others.
I wouldn't be surprised if most of those are probably already sold. Usually with these things, there's such a long wait list that, or, you know, people, they're so hard to find. As soon as they come in, people are like, I've been waiting for that one. I guess you've got 4 years to save as well. But yeah. A pink penguin, arguably the coolest guitar ever, with three pickups.
Why, Matt, have you never owned a Gretsch? Because you often speak fondly about
Gretsch. I don't know. I guess maybe the right one. That when I all the time I've worked in music stores, we've never had one on the wall that I've actually wanted. Like, I think occasionally, maybe one white Falcon.
Would it be a penguin for you rather than a Falcon?
Oh, I think it would just come down if there was two there and I played both, it'd be whichever one was better. I always thought the Penguin was the coolest. And the only time I've ever seen one like in the flesh, because, yeah, not many stores stock them as stand and had them on the wall. We certainly never did in the two shops that I was in. The only time I ever saw one was a left-handed one, secondhand. Unfortunately, it was left-handed. But I don't know. Falcon, I'd probably, if I had to pick between the two, a Falcon would be very cool. A pink Falcon.
I guess, the thing with the white Falcons is they don't really do like an affordable model. They start at the $3,000 price point.
Yeah, specifically the Falcon. Obviously, you can get the bigger hollow body Electromatics, but the. I also realised that the headstock on the pink Penguin actually has a little sort of aged gold plate that's stamped the pink Penguin, which I think is incredibly cool. And the one that you never see, which would be incredibly amazing to actually see, especially in a pink, would be the white chicken, which is the hollow bodied telly with Gretsch detailing. Right. So yeah, slightly thicker telly with all of the gold sparkle binding and everything. I can't remember who they made that for, whether there was just a limited run of them or something. But yeah, the white chicken. I always thought it. One thing I was like, if I was just a billionaire, I'd just go to Gretsch and just be like, right, what I want is a matching pink chicken, penguin, and falcon, and then it just comes in some sort of crazy flight case. Just like, yeah, just make me all three. It's a matching set.
It's not.
I'd be a dangerous person to offend a custom shop if I was a billionaire.
You could probably do that on a credit card, though, mate. If you
and then just forever pay it off until. Yeah.
Well, you just said you got 4 years to save up.
Yeah, exactly.
And
yeah,
you get paid roughly that, don't you?
Yeah. You know,
maybe not a year, but over 4 years, you get paid about £1 billion, don't you?
Yeah, about £1 billion. Yeah,
you've got 4 years to save up. Sounds fun.
I think I want a Gretsch.
Have you ever had one?
Well, we spoke about it last week. I had that Gretsch Junior, like the single pickup bowl one, but not really. Like I've never had one since I've actually properly cared about guitars.
Right.
You obviously. What did you have? You had a black Electromatic of some form.
Yeah, I had a Electromatic. I think it was a 5425. I think it was an Electromatic with Diamond single coils.
Oh, very
rather
cool.
Than like Filtrons or anything. And that was what I used in the ska band that I played in when I was... I got it when I was 16. And again, I've told this story on the podcast before. I was 16 and I went into GAC to buy a telly because I wanted to be Joe Strummer. And Mark, who was working at GAC at the time, refused to sell me a telly and made me buy this Gretsch instead. But because it'd been knocked or something, so it had some crack on the back, right. And he knew that I wouldn't care about that, and I didn't care about that. And presumably he was getting some sort of kickback for selling B stock items. So he totally murked me, and I ended up buying it. And I did, in fairness, I did love it. And I played that in this ska band between when I was 16 through till I think our final show was I was 19 or 20. I probably did, I don't know, 100 gigs with that, maybe, probably not that many, but I loved it. I thought it was great. And then I by the time I sort of started working at GAC, I was like, okay, I'm a bit more au fait with what guitars I like now, and what I like is the Telecaster that I tried to buy 5 years ago, thanks Mark. I ended up buying that and moving on the Gretsch. But it's again one of those things that I have kind of come back around to. I think I would enjoy playing a Gretsch a lot more now, because I so often I'm just picking up guitars even without plugging them in necessarily. And Mark talked about that briefly when he was talking about his Casino a couple of weeks ago, just being able to pick up and play. And yeah, so I've been thinking, I've been sort of swaying a bit more to the idea of a Gretsch. But yeah, don't know. They're just a bit big and unwieldy even for someone like me, I think, but yeah, we'll see.
Yeah. That's it. A bit feedbacky. Is always my problem with, you know, my ES-175 is when I actually try and, you know, not play it in you know, in my office at sort of low volumes, if I ever want to take it and actually do any performance stuff with it, the amount of effects I run through it just makes it not especially usable, which is always the problem. Anyway, that is about it for this week's episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast. We're going to be continuing over on our Patreon, where you can join us as well, dear listener. We're going to be talking about more news things, maybe taking some questions from the group. I'd definitely try to do that. But you can join us there, and you can support us on Patreon for as little as $1 a month. $1 a month will get you this regular episode ad-free and early. At the $5 tier, you'll get that plus access to our entire back catalogue of Patreon-exclusive episodes and mini-series. And at the $10 tier, you'll get all of those things, plus you'll get your name sung in our Patreon outro song. Which is rather lovely. You can, of course, follow us on all the major social platforms with @GuitarNerds. Join us on the Facebook community with facebook.com/groups/GuitarNerdsForum. And we'll be back next week with more of this guitar nerdery. Farewell.
Cheers, gang.
Bye.
Butterworth, Simon Milbourne, Mark the South Cadawacky, and Stuart Robson.
Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.